All right, Metal Asylum fans, my name is Jack Mangan, and it is my honor and pleasure to present for you an interview with the legendary Devin Townsend, who has been around the scene for a long time. He's been all across genres, and it's really, Mr. Townsend, it's really an honor to speak with you today. So thanks for making time for me and for Metal Asylum here.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Great. So, you know, I do want to start out, though, with complaints for you, though, if you don't mind. So the first, really the first complaint is just how much music you're putting out, man. It's hard to keep up. It's, you know, for us, we're devoted fans, but, you know, we're still geeking out on one release, and then the next stuff comes out. So, I know people talk quite a bit about how prolific you are. I mean, you know, do you feel like you're at a comfortable pace? Do you feel like you want to speed up, or how does that feel for you?
Well, I mean, I think my output is pretty much in line with how I view the process, in that I do it more of a compulsion rather than to try and prove a point or to try and besiege people with product. I think my process is really efficient, more so than prolific, and I find that because of that, I record a lot of music and without a whole lot of effort, and then I have it sit, and the longer it sits without me releasing it, the more it starts to interfere with other ideas that may come up. So I find that I just put it out more for my own sake rather than anybody else's. And I can totally see how that becomes frustrating for other people. But I think the alternative is me sort of screwing up my connection to music if I don't do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
Well, yeah, and of course I'm kidding. I mean, you know, it's really been it's been great. You know, the abundance of ideas, I'd say, just on a single album of yours, you know, just the abundance of ideas that you hear, or really even in, you know, some of the heavy layering you've done on some of your tracks. I mean, it just seems like there's just this constant, really, deluge of ideas. Is that kind of what it's like in your head? Is there just nonstop creativity coming out? Do you think that's indicative of how the music kind of flows through you and how your creativity flows?
Maybe in some ways, but I mean, I think everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses, and I know that my strengths lie in those sorts of creative endeavors, you know, producing music or articulating creative ideas that are musical or artistic nature. But on the other end of the spectrum, man, I struggle through almost every other aspect of life, so. You know, you gotta just sort of play the cards you're dealt, and I'm fortunate that I'm able to articulate myself constantly, creatively. But you just gotta sort of take into account the other end of that equation, which is, you know, social interactions and figuring out MIDI. For example, I spent a whole morning trying to figure out MIDI, and I felt like total tool. I mean, it's like in one ear, and I feel like someone's screaming at me in Greek when I'm trying to figure out these things. And there's other people, the people I'm talking to on the phone that are trying to explain it to me are frustrated because of my lack of being able to grasp that concept. So, you know, again, what I may have going for me in terms of creative output is countered by most other things.
Well, I mean, as far as social interactions, I mean, you know, we see that professionally, you know, that's been a huge part of your career, really even from the early days with Steve Vai on through. I mean, the list of collaborations is really impressive. And how do you feel about that as part of your overall legacy and even going forward? Do you think that's still going to continue to be part of your sound and your signature?
Maybe. I mean, my collaborative efforts are usually based on older relationships or barter system, when I'll include somebody in my music or my work, but you know, I can't afford to pay them what they're worth, so we sort of do the barter thing. But I think it's you know, it's an odd thing as well, because I get asked so often to like do guest things or to collaborate with people. I mean, I usually have less than no interest, and it's frustrating too to have to explain that to people, because you know people come into my world that I've never met or I've never seen before, and then they'll insist that we should be collaborating. And I think to myself, yeah, but that's not you know, my collaborative efforts with people are more to do with the barter system to get my own work done rather than some burning need to participate with other people's music. And that's not to be flippant about it. I got so much to do, right?
Oh, I understand. I was going to ask you then to work on my album, but I won't ask then. But
thank you, buddy.
You know, we want to talk at least a little bit about Casualties of Cool, and I think that's a great segue, I think. Tell us a little bit about the project. I mean, for those of us who are less familiar with it, and please also, I hope I pronounce your name correctly, but tell me about your collaborator on these albums. Is it Shay Amiel Dorval?
Yeah, Shay. See, it started as a barter thing in that when I was recording the album Key in 2007, 2009, I forget, I think it's 2009. Often when I write, I have an idea in my head. I'm like, well, this needs a certain type of voice or this needs a certain type of instrumentation. At the time, I thought there was a line in the song Gatto and there was a line in the song Heaven's End that I really heard a sort of bluesy singer on. Mm-hmm. And I was looking around Vancouver through the people that I knew so I wouldn't have to, you know, stumble into a new relationship sight unseen. And Dave, the guitar player in the band, said, well, I've got a friend who I played on some of her demos a few years back, and she's really, like, mellow. It's not, like, a dramatic or intense type of interaction. Her name's Shay, and she is into helping me out. So she sang on Key, and I remember thinking when we tracked her vocals, I remember thinking, look, if I ever I'm in a situation where I'm looking for that sound, she's just got such a great delivery because it's devoid of that sort of anxiety that comes from people really wanting anything. You know, she didn't give a shit if she was on it, and that's exactly what I was looking for, you know? So when I started poking around with the Casualties material, it originally started with me just playing guitar for the fun of it. My work has just gotten so intense over the past 2 years that it's very easy to lose sight of why you do music in the first place, and you know, being the fact that I love it. And so I had an old Telecaster I was plunking around on without any intention of it doing anything. And then just a couple of chord progressions came out, and then Shay came back into my mind. I thought, okay, well, I haven't talked to her in a few years. I wonder if she's still around. So I sent her an email. I said, hey, it's Dev, and I'm doing a couple of things here, and I don't think it will ever come out, but I'm going to send you a bunch of ideas, and if you hear anything on it, just feel free to do it. And I just didn't hear from her for a while, and then eventually she just started sending ideas back, and it just evolved without any pressure, and over the course of 4 years, this record sort of appeared, and it ended up being one of my favorite things I've ever done, almost entirely because there was no anticipation, no expectation, I mean, and no pressure and no anything. It was awesome, especially at this stage in my career.
Well, yeah, and congratulations on it. I mean, there's some really classic Devin Townsend moments on it, and also I really, really admire the album, the Key album, and her vocals on it. And I do hear, I mean, I hope you don't mind me saying, I think that I do hear a lot of parallels. It's its own distinctive sound, but there's still a common thread there. And I think it probably sounds closer to me to Key than some of your other stuff. Certainly, of course, Strapping and Lad, but I mean, I hear it there.
Yeah. I mean, I do so much. And I with Casualties or Key or Ghost or Hummer or any of these sort of left of center things that I've done, I'm certainly not trying to convince people that are into really heavy music that this is something that they should check out. And that goes back to our first question in that I do this because it's a compulsion for me to do it. And it allows me to keep that passion after 25 years of doing this in music. It's so easy. And I know people who've been doing this for as long as I have, but just don't care anymore in a lot of ways. They're just sort of over it, and it's become a job and all this sort of thing. But allowing myself to do things like Casualties or Tea or Ghost sort of keeps the flame alight in me to do the heavier stuff still.
Sure. Like Zeltoid seems to be, you know, where you're, and of course, the Deconstruction album, but it seems like that seems to be where your heavy mind is. And it's, and then if you even see people talk about the mellow Devin Townsend, which I think comes out more in some of these other projects like this, like Casualties are Cool.
Yeah. And I mean, Deconstruction and Zeltoid in a lot of ways is where I was too. You know, I don't know if, in a similar way to Strapping and Lad, I don't know if I was to sit down and say, okay, it's time to do another Deconstruction or another Zeltoid, if I could do that at this point either. It's part of me writing is allowing it to go where it wants to go without trying to impose any of these things on it. And now I'm writing another DTP record, and it's a different thing again. I find it interesting when people think that it's as simple as just turning off and on a tap, when in reality the process of me making these things is firmly rooted in trying to, well, I guess figure myself out in a way. And by making this music, it's sort of you move on from it, and there's really no need or any desire to go back in time. In fact, to try and replicate things is ultimately going to end in shitty music. And something that I think the people who really do pay attention to what I do could see through pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair statement. And again, I certainly don't, please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it does seem like, especially, it seems like, you know, introspection and self-discovery is a huge part of what you represent throughout your albums. That's something I take away personally. So is that something that you would say that's a huge part of really who you've been and where you've come from and what you're trying to get out as an artist?
I think inadvertently. I don't know if that was the modus overall, but it's certainly the byproduct of it. I think I'm just trying to be happy in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think that my ability to understand my own emotions and my tendency to absorb situations and people emotionally and all these sorts of things are such that, you know, all sort of points like, well, you got to get over this, you got to get over this, you got to get over this if you want to reach your objectives. And so in trying to learn how to get over it, almost strictly from a selfish point of view, these sorts of moments of self-discovery are just a result of that. And the music isn't written where I'm trying to project a message, or I'm trying to have some sort of altruistic, you know, trying to heal the world or anything like that. It's just, again, it's a compulsion. And I find that I'm sensitive enough to stimulus and my environment that has led me, for example, to sobriety or you know, different types of personal habits or interactions that may on the surface seem like I'm trying to be clean or clear or whatever, but really it's just cause and effect. It's like, well, if I don't do that, then this happens, and that's what I want. So I'm going in that direction, and then I just end up writing tons of music, and then that process, I suppose, is illustrated in results of that.
Sure. One of the pitfalls of being successful in your field is the whole world is somewhat privy to your, you know, to your tough times. But we know that you've been through some rough patches, but it does seem like, you know, when you publicly kind of put that stuff behind you, that you did become more prolific. I think the music became, I think it became even more clear. And I just, again, I don't want to say anything that's not true or put anything on you that's not true, but you seem happier, you know, from my perspective and out in the stand, you seem like you got your shit together really, really great now. And you seem kind of happier and more focused.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Sobriety was a huge part of that, really. It's just a massive part of it. But at the same time, age is also a huge part of that. It's just you sort things out as you get older. Like, as a 25-year-old man, I had a bunch of things that I was hung up on that now, as a 44-year-old man, I just are no longer really of much significance. And I think that's just a rite of passage in some way. And yeah, you know, it is, there's an element of vulnerability to doing it in the way that I found myself choosing to do things. But, you know, I'm not wearing a mask. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't have anything to hide. And I think that there's something really liberating about that for me now as well, that probably wasn't there when I was younger.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think your audience, you know, your fans were enjoying the ride and were enjoying seeing you better. And of course, I know this wasn't your intention, but you've kind of defeated this misconception that, you know, like that Hendrix is only great because he was on drugs, and you know, only great art comes from drugs. And I think when you got a brilliant mind, you know, like yourself, I think you're at your best now. It's great to see.
Well, thank you, man. I mean, you know, Zappa was never the drugs, and Zappa was never a huge influence. I was much more into the sort of deep heart sort of side of things, where I think he was probably whacked from his career. But I mean, you know, you think about any of these people, I think a misconception about a lot of things is that you need something to do what it is that you're meant to do. I made a decision for myself earlier, or, you know, 10 years ago, where I thought, look, if without drinking and if without drugs, what I do is of no significance whatsoever, I'm willing to live with that rather than sort of play the martyr and participate with mental states that I had no real control or understanding of, and then try and represent that, because my creative process is so much to do with me being on autopilot and not second-guessing myself, that if my mind is reacting to things that are sort of beyond me, then I really don't have any direct connection to what it is that I do. It's like so gratifying to get super high or super drunk and think, well, listen to this crazy riff. I don't even know where this came from. Man, this is so intense and blah, 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 blah. But then all of a sudden when you start writing it, it's like if somebody was to ask you, well, what's that about? Where's that from? What's this? What's your intention with that? I need to be able to say, I think, well, this is my intention. This is what this is about. This is what I was trying to say. And to sort of say, well, I don't know. I have no idea. And then have people open to misinterpret these things, I think it's just a lot more legwork than I feel the desire to do, right? Like, I don't want to have to diffuse people's interpretations of myself. I'd much rather be able to say it's about this. This is it. And there's some people that think that what I do now sucks compared to what I did when I was in my mid-20s, and that's fair too. You know, it's just a part of the process for me to accept it, and getting closer and closer to my own personal source requires me to be as clear as I can be.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. And of course, you know, I think you look at Bowie and your friend Michael Ackerfeld. I mean, great artists evolve and they take a lot of shit for it, but you know, I think the work speaks for itself.
I mean, I think the thing is, I still do heavy material. It's just not the same type of heavy material that I once did, and that's just what happened, right? Like, that's just what happened. And I think when people can't understand that, when they can't understand that sort of inevitability of change, I often wonder if these are the same people that continue to be stuck in the same patterns that have caused them personally problems in their past as well. And if so, then it makes sense to me why they would be confused by other people changing, no value to them. But again, man, it's like, I can't spend too much time trying to please other people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, people who listen to and truly support it, I think we want that either, you know, to have me sort of belie the things that I feel like doing for the sake of repeating the past, right? I don't know. I don't even know if I could.
Yeah, and I would agree. We've seen it happen also where artists kind of release the same album again and again, you know, a couple of years apart, and the fans don't want that either.
Damned if you do, if you damned if you don't, right? You know, it's like, if I tried to release the same record again and again and again, eventually people would be like, he's just releasing the same record again and again. So you release something different. They're like, why isn't he releasing the same record again and again and again? I mean, it's a big part of this process for me or anybody who's involved with it to understand that those sorts of criticisms, not only those sorts of criticisms, but criticisms in general are just part of the deal. You know, there's going to be people that like you, there's going to be people that hate you, there's going to be people that support you, there's going to be people that don't want you to do what you do. It's like, you know, and I guess if you can't get over that, then you know, I don't know what to tell you. You should probably be doing something else.
We're glad that you're sticking with it.
I love doing this, man. I love making music. Like, I love being creative. I love being at a point where I can, you know, get an idea and say, oh, I want to make an alien puppet and make it really elaborate, you know, like fart jokes, and then put a symphony on it and then get thousands of people to sing it. Then, we'll do it at the Royal Albert Hall. And then, okay, we're done with that. What are we going to do next? Okay, I'm going to do a symphony, and it's going to be about sexuality. And then, you know, then I'll be casually as a cool, and it's going to be this. I mean, dude, it's like, and I'm not blowing myself here necessarily. Rather, I'm just trying to express how the process goes. And I feel like if there's someone who's in the position where in this day and age, in this musical industry climate, has the ability to articulate these really creatively out there ideas, I'd be a fool not to.
Sure. And so, I mean, I think that leads, you know, we're almost out of time, but I do want to touch on, you know, you mentioned that another DTP is coming, which is awesome to hear. So what are you excited about that you have coming down the pipeline?
Well, everything that I do, I like to have an angle that inspires me. You know, there's a gospel choir and an Epic Cloud and Flute and Ghost and Trey and I and Casualties, and there's always something, you know, Aliens and Live when I was doing Alien, and just all sorts of little things. And I think the new DTP, I'm enjoying bringing songs to the band and then have them massage them into shape with me. It's a new way of approaching music, and it's really cool. It adds energy to it. And for the next project after that, I'm doing a full symphony, you know, like 100-person symphony, 100-person choir. And the concept is over the top, and I've, you know, created my own weird font for this kind of language thing that I've been working on, so it looks like this crazy alien thing. And it's just, it's so creatively free. I'm not tied into having to produce, you know, pop songs, and therefore the sky's kind of the limit, and the only jurisdiction that I think I need to have over the whole process is that it means something to me. But I'm not doing it just to be provocative, and I'm not doing it just to try and prove a point to anybody. It's like, when I'm excited about something and those sorts of angles provide excitement, it unearths itself, and that in and of itself is just thrilling, man. It gives me something to look forward to every day.
Well, that's great. And, you know, we certainly look forward to everything that you have coming up. Actually, I guess I lied a little bit. Let's have the final question be, tell us a little bit about this release that's coming up in 2016 for Casualties of Cool. And then I'll let you go, I promise.
Casualties of Cool is something that I've been working on for years, 4 years, and it's the only record that I've done in recent memory where there's no expectation, no pressure, nobody was asking for it, and it evolved completely naturally. And in the same way as Ocean Machine evolved naturally and that's what happened, I was as surprised as anybody as to when I was left with my own devices and no one was asking me for anything. That's what came out of this age, Casualties. And so there's something brutally uncompromising about Casualties, and whether or not people like it, you know, maybe some people think of it as a guilty pleasure. Some people may really like it. Regardless, I'm really excited to see if people have any interest in it. And if they do, you know, I'll look at it then for touring or future music or whatever. But I'm just so stoked to be able to do it, man.
All right. Well, great. I'm looking forward to it. And I want to, again, thank you for your time. I look forward to seeing you if you, you know, next time you do come through the Phoenix area. I look forward to catching your live show, whatever manifestation it's going to be in. But it really been great stuff. I've been a huge admirer for years. So I really appreciate the chance to talk to you and, you know, you giving your time today.
That's awesome, man. Thank you for the questions, too. They're very nice. And I'm sure we'll see each other around. And have a great night, brother.